when you think about your health. You might think of individual choices and treatments, your diet and exercise habits, prescriptions and procedures when you get sick, the stuff you talk to your doctor about. But there's another side to health, public health, the things that can affect huge numbers of people, whether that's air and water quality, access to preventive care, affordable and healthy food, or warning systems to help spot the spread of new infectious diseases. Our next guest is a doctor working with individual patients. But he sees a big problem. An overwhelming share of health spending in the U.S. goes to individual health, not as much goes to public health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How often do you think about the concept of public health? Do you think we need wider interventions, changes to help stop problems before they cause that visit to the doctor's office? Did COVID-19 change the way you think about the way we think about health in the United States? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Michael Stein is professor and chair of health law, policy, and management at the Boston University School of Public Health. He's the author of over a dozen books and executive editor of Public Health Post. His newest book is called Me Versus Us, A Health Divided. Dr. Stein, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Last time I talked to you, we were talking about your book where you talk to your patients about their money and their struggles in some cases with money and how that affected their health. Can you talk about that and what started you down this road of thinking more about public health more generally?
Yeah, I'm a primary care doctor. I see people one by one in my office. I'm also a researcher and I moved recently to a public health school and began to think about things outside of my office and the larger world, right? So I grew up and was taught in my medical training and also just as growing up in the United States that we have powerful ideas about individualism. And we think of our lives as individual journeys, we make our own career success and failure, and we're self-absorbed in the pursuit of happiness. And so that, of course, leads to the optimization of health. And so we believe that we're responsible for and can change our health. We can eat better, we can sleep more, we can exercise. And that's what I call the me part of this story. Well, the public health asks something very different of us, right? It asks us to think of others. It asks us to think of us. It asks us to think of America as a group project where the benefits might not come to us immediately or specifically, but rather to all of us, including our kids and our grandkids. So public health really is a different framework of thinking about the world, and that's what I've been writing about recently.
And in the book, you look at the investment in the me side of things, you know, the healthcare, versus the us side of things, the public health. Can you lay out which side of the seesaw is getting pressed into the dirt?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So the truth is that in the United States, we spend $3 to $4 trillion a year on health care, medical care. That is going to our doctors, emergency rooms, into the hospital, getting CAT scans, getting blood tests, paying for our medications. That's healthcare. We're very familiar with it. When you talk to somebody at a barbecue or at Thanksgiving dinner and say, "Tell me about your health," I imagine within 15 seconds, they'll be talking about their doctor. That's not what public health is. It is larger things that we're going to talk about. But what we know is that per American per year, we spend $11,000 on healthcare. And per American per year, we spend $280 on public health. So 40 times less on public health than we do on healthcare. And there are lots of reasons for that. But because we spend less money on it, we take it less seriously, we know less about it. And that's a problem. I believe that that's a deep, deep problem for Americans and for our kids and grandkids to come.
Now, if it was working great, that might not be a problem. What do we find when we compare the healthcare outcomes or the health outcomes here in the U.S. versus comparable income countries?
Yeah, that's a terrific question. Thank you. The idea of life expectancy is one we can all understand. We think of it as sort of a population of people, maybe in our family, maybe in our neighborhood, maybe in our town or state. Certainly as a country, we understand what life expectancy is. We expect to live a certain number of years as a group. The other way to think about it is, you know, what are my chances of living to the age of 70? That's how another way we think about life expectancy. Now, I consider life expectancy a beautiful metric of public health. It is sort of a group metric. And what we know is that in the 1990s, the average life expectancy in the United States was about the same as anywhere in developed countries in Europe. Germany, Norway, Spain, England, we were about the same. And now we are considerably worse than all of Europe. We're about 40th in the world in life expectancy at this point, even though we like to think of Americans as exceptional. We're 40th, which means that, you know, an American baby born today is more likely to die before they turn 5, and an American teenager today is more likely to die before they turn 20, and an American adult is more likely to die before they turn 70 than any place in Europe. That is, Europe has better life outcomes than us across the board. That's for whites and blacks in high poverty areas and low poverty areas. That's a shocking statistic if you really believe that America is exceptional, and I think it's unacceptable.
Talking to Dr. Michael Stein, professor and chair of health law, policy, and management at the Boston University School of Public Health. We're talking about his new book. It's called Me Versus Us, A Health Divided. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Malik is with us in Green Bay. Malik, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, the impacts to public health and even public health initiatives, if something like universal health care were to ever pass, how things like that might change, you know, from an initiative standpoint.
Malik, thanks for the call. Dr. Stein, universal health care as a way, at least, to address health care access.
Yeah, Malik, thanks for the question. The universal health care, I would consider in health insurance or access to care, which comes through insurance in the United States, as a part of public health. I would consider it a small part of public health. It is an important part of public health. And I think a real moral question for the United States, why we have 10% of our population who is uninsured, hesitant to get care, likely to be bankrupted if they actually have a medical event. Those are sort of moral and important access questions. In terms of whether our life expectancy would change if those 10% of people had health care, is probably a small amount. I don't think that that's what's driving our low life expectancy in the United States, but I do think it's an important political question, something that I believe in entirely, that everybody should have a right to health care, and an important thing to bring up, but not central to public health. Mm-hmm. Again, health care distinguished from public health.
Malik, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Dr. Stein, can you give an example where you think an investment in public health could really help us tackle a particular problem, one of those things that really is bringing our life expectancy, holding it back?
Yeah, so let's talk about, let's choose one of our big ongoing problems, which I would say is overweight or obesity. So obesity has gotten worse in the past 50 years in the United States, right? So this notion of the me view of the world, right, which is maximize my health, maximize self-interest, and that will produce a better future for all of us, hasn't really worked out. And the paradigm case for that is obesity. So we spend billions of dollars on diet books. We enroll in diet programs. We now have medications for obesity. We do surgery for obesity. We've tried lots of medical things, and yet we're worse off than we were 50 years ago, such that nearly half of our population is obese, which, as you know, drives diabetes and heart disease and therefore premature death. Well, why is that? Is it because really 50% of our population just has no willpower and are just weak people who in the individual view of the world are unsuccessful? I don't think so. I don't think that that's how we're ever going to get out of the obesity problem. The problem of obesity, even for people who are dieting, is that they live in a world, we all live in a world, where food and food systems are dictated by large companies that call the production, the processing, the distribution, the preparation, and the consumption of food in America. And those systems are shaped by social and cultural systems that we live in and do things like have policies such as corn and sugar subsidies. And when you have corn and sugar subsidies in your country, you have the cheapest food having corn and sugar in it, which is high calorie food, which is why when we go to the supermarket, we're deluged with difficulties in keeping to a diet. So all of this is a long way of saying that the world that we live in, the policies that we've allowed to drive our food systems, is what's driving obesity. And that's not an individual decision. It is at the end of the road, but it's really hard. And so if you want a good public health, then you want to set up a system of the world, of the economic and social and cultural world, such that it's easy for people to maintain their health. And with food, we've done exactly the opposite, and we're in trouble because of that. And that trouble will only be solved by large policies, I believe, and many of them. There's no single simple answer to obesity in America, but I believe it's driven by policies. And I keep using that word policies because when you're dealing with populations, as we talk about in public health, policies matter.
We're talking about public health and individual health care in the U.S. Our guest is Dr. Michael Stein from Boston University School of Public Health. His new book is called Me Versus Us, A Health Divided. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a question for our guest, if you think that there is a public health intervention that you'd like to see that you think could make a big difference, maybe something you've seen in your own community, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Dr. Michael Stein, professor and chair of health law, policy, and management at the Boston University School of Public Health. His new book is Me Versus Us, A Health Divided. He says too much of our spending is going toward individual health care, not enough toward public health, things that could prevent a lot of those trips maybe to the doctor's office. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Ruth is with us in Eau Claire. Ruth, hi.
Yes, hi. Public health is a lot about preventing illness and individual illness and broader group illness. When you're dealing with prevention, you're in a world where you have to be able to prove or talk about how certain things didn't happen because you put things into place. So more people didn't get ill because you put masks on, for example, or some other intervention. How do you see, Dr. Stein, how do you see getting that concept out into the public to be broader understood?
Great question, Dr. Stein.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Public health is about prevention. It's one of the three P's that I've talked about for what is public health, right? Which is prevention across an entire population. The second P is that population. And the third P is policies. And you're talking really about sort of messaging. Like, how do we prove to people that we've had a benefit? And it's a great question. And the answer is maybe it's around things like coming up with analogies. So let's think about sort of the general public good. We believe in the public good in certain parts of our lives, like fire departments, right? We have fire departments that are we pay for through our taxes in most cases, in most towns. And we believe in fire departments, and we want fire departments to take care of us when things arise. And we want fire departments to limit the amount of problems when they notice a problem. And fires don't go away. If you shut your fire department down, you wouldn't get rid of fires. You would just have bigger fires. So fire departments are important because they let us have a public good that we've invested in. But in addition to that, we have over the years invested in fire prevention, right? We have better wiring. We have different materials for our houses. So we do a variety of things that say, well, we're going to keep fires down through the materials that we use, and we're going to keep a public service up through a fire department. And we have to do the same thing around public health. We have to think of it as a fire department defending a public good that has elements of prevention and elements of surveillance and elements of early intervention. And all of those things are done by our public health departments. And we need to understand what our public health departments do, which I don't think we do in the United States very well, because we have a confusing public health system, and we need to sort of be aware of that.
Talking to Dr. Michael Stein about his new book, Me Versus Us, A Health Divided. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We've got Andrew on the line now in Heartland. Andrew, hi.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. I had a quick question for Dr. Stein. I'm a neurosurgeon, and we've been seeing more and more young kids dying from heroin overdose here in Waukesha. I think our last numbers are about 11 a month, which is really scary. I think there is an epidemic of drugs, and I agree with him 100% in that this is all about policy, and I think we've been very lame in regards to tightening our belts and trying to make better policy regarding illegal drugs. And what I'm seeing more and more is us liberating this, specifically now with marijuana, that all we know as of now is a way to introduce the young population into drugs and into stronger drugs. I mean, my stand on it is very simple. I would say absolutely no illegal drugs, and that includes marijuana. But from the policy point of view, Dr. Stein, what would you suggest we do? Gotcha. How do we tackle?
Andrew, thanks for the call. Dr. Stein, what would be your public health approach to especially the drugs that are causing those overdoses?
Yeah, so if you look again at life expectancy in the United States, what you see is we have lost 2.5 years of life expectancy in the last 3 years. That is a historical record for us going backward. It's just terrible news. And part of the contribution to that is the growth of drugs. We have 100,000 people dying of opioid overdoses in the United States per year at this point, the highest ever. We also have more than 100,000 people dying every year of a legal drug called alcohol in America. And we have another 100,000 dying of cigarettes, nicotine, another legal drug in the United States. So there's a combination of what I would call avoidable mortality by coming up with policies, and they're complicated. They're not simple, that will try to minimize deaths from these particular causes in the United States, along with gun violence and accidents. These are the reasons why our life expectancy has dropped and was dropping even before COVID, clearly made worse by COVID. So these are complicated policies, but it's not just about opioids and prescription drugs. It's really about alcohol and cigarettes as well still.
Andrew, thanks for that call. Dr. Stein, you also write in the book that there's not always a financial incentive to take a public health approach. I could write a diet book. I probably won't, but I could potentially make a lot of money for me by doing that. Advocating for a public health change to tackle obesity, there's not really a strong profit motive. How much of an obstacle is that?
Obstacle, right? When we get the private sector involved in any part of our society, things move faster. We're an innovative country. And the question is how to do that in the public health arena, which is a product that ends up being very local. So it's hard to make money when you have hundreds of public health departments, because as you know, Rob, in the United States, we have city health departments and county health departments and state health departments, and we don't have a federal health department. And so to how to make money across all of those health departments, which are typically government entities interested in large communities, there's not a clear way to do that. There are some investment vehicles now that are bringing private equity into public health in small ways. It hasn't really caught on yet in the United States. It may well in certain ways, but in general, public health, because it deals with large swaths of the population, becomes a government project. And that's right. And that is the way it will be done in the United States over the next decade. But we're also, of course, at a time when we distrust government, and our government moves slowly, certainly at the federal level, at the state level as well. So it's hard to, again, engage at full speed here at a moment where we distrust and feel divided. So it's a tough way, and I don't think that our private sector is going to bail us out of this one.
Dr. Stein, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Dr. Michael Stein, professor and chair of health law, policy, and management at the Boston University School of Public Health. He talked with us today about his new book. It's called Me Versus Us, A Health Divided, looking at investment in and lack of investment in, he says, public health here in the United States.